runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 294 with guest Kamal Aburi, recorded Monday, November 19th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I am on my break right now during the .NET Rocks Visual Studio 2012 launch road trip across the U.S. twice. We're almost done. We've got one more leg to do through Arizona, California, and Nevada, ending at the Dev Intersection Conference, and I hope you'll come out for that as well. But today, my guest is Kamal Aburi, and he is a premier field engineer for Microsoft based in the New York, New Jersey region, supporting dedicated customers, improving their IT health, empowering their IT teams to drive successful deployments, plan for supportability, and improve systems availability. He worked in the IT industry for 14 years on various Microsoft technologies, primarily helping enterprise customers with Exchange deployments, migration, and training. He's a guest blogger at mrproactive.com and a frequent speaker at the New York Exchange User Group. Welcome back, Kamal.
Thanks, Richard.
It was only a few months ago that you were on the show, but we were talking about Office 365 then.
Right, we were. We were discussing about all the different options we have available to get into Office 365, what a hybrid deployment is, and all the different deployment options we have for Exchange.
Yeah, well, and Exchange is such a vast product. There's always more to talk about. What do you see out in the field these days for Exchange? What do you worry about?
So, being the premier field engineer, one of the things we do as a part of our regular day-to-day jobs is to go there and do Exchange risk assessments. We basically go into Exchange environments, look for issues and risks that are that we see pop up in the environment that, you know, differ from the best practices.
Mm-hmm.
Few of the things that, you know, we see very common that come across all the time are, you know, in all the different stages of the IT life cycle, you know, they start with the planning phase where, you know, they a lot of things have to happen during the planning phase for Exchange. People, you know, they just skip the planning phase, usually are very excited about the new product, start installing it without actually thinking around, you know, what are all the things that are needed to be planned.
Sure.
Couple of things, you know, I usually recommend customers do is, you know, lay out that plan, you know, divide it into pieces. We're saying, you know, what are all the different services you want to offer as a part of this Exchange service, right? Like, is it email? What are all your client services? You know, is it ActiveSync connectivity? Is mm-hmm. it Outlook Anywhere? You know, you got to do that logical planning first.
Yeah, really go through the feature set that people are actually depending on.
Right, exactly. And to the other aspect of it, right, is when you define these services, it's not just Exchange that you have to think about. You have to think about all the components that it talks to. A good example being Active Directory. And, you know, you need to have those agreements in place with your operations group that actually run Active Directory, you know, to see if they can provide the service that you are expecting them to provide from. So, you know, you have to think about the planning around what your service level agreements are or
right.
operational level agreements are with that particular team.
Well, when you're talking about it, I mean, email is one of those things that people can't stand for it to be down at all.
Right, exactly.
No tolerance for downtime on email. I've never seen a product,
mm-hmm.
nothing else that comes close except specialty products. But in day-to-day yeah. expectations of your average mortal is email always works.
Yeah. We have a funny saying, and you know, when we do these risk assessments, we do what we call an operational interview where we actually talk to the engineers about their operational best practices and see, you know, where they land in terms of the risk for those operational practices. And one of the things we ask is, you know, how do you identify or get notified when there is an outage, you know, a server goes down or something goes down? And you know, I would say 90% of the people say that it's our end users.
Yep.
They respond quickly to an email outage than anything else.
Yes, unfortunately, they try and respond via email, and that just doesn't work.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's work our way through the list. If I'm a guy running exchange right now, Kitty, where should I start looking if I want to do my own risk assessment?
Well, if you want to do your own risk assessment, you know, think about different aspects of it, right? Mm-hmm. So there is the design aspect. Is your physical infrastructure able to support what you have? There are a couple of tools that we have, you know, like Mailbox Server Role Requirements Calculator that the product team came out with. Basically, it's an Excel-based tool, where you input your parameters in. You mm-hmm. basically give it some information around how many servers you have, you know, what's your site resiliency, you know, do you have a disaster recovery available? It'll ask you things around your user profiles, basically say what's your mailbox size, what's the average message size, you know, how many mails do end users send and receive, and it gives you an output of, you know, how you need to actually design your environment.
Sure. And it's also a great starting point for knowing what data you need to collect in the first place, actually knowing how many mailboxes you've got and what's configured, what you're using, what people are depending on.
Right, exactly. And these are the things that people usually, you know, they install, they run the environment, and then the pain points start. But if you start planning before, you know, you do these things around, you know, monitoring your exchange environment for what's your peak workload like. Mm-hmm. You know, Monday morning, is it 9 to 10? Or, you know, taking performance data during those peak times and actually looking into the data and seeing, you know, how many users are connected, you know, what's my message flow rate, you know, how many send and receives do my user do on a regular basis.
And what tool do I use to get those numbers?
You can use Perfmon, you know, that's the standard tool that,
right.
You know, that you can use to collect data. But you also have ExPerfWiz, which is another tool which automates most of the exchange performance monitoring. It still uses behind the scenes, you know, it just configures the required counters that are needed, and automatically, you know, you can specify like how long to run, you know, how frequently to collect the data and just configure it.
So it just makes it simpler for you to do what you could do by hand.
Right, exactly. It's called ExPerfWiz.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by one of the persons in the product group there. You know, it automatically sees, you know, when you run the environment, it sees, okay, it's Exchange 2007, it has mailbox role installed, and then configures all the required counters for it.
So nice. And this is now a CodePlex project, so you can just go get it off of CodePlex.
Yep, you can.
All right. Next.
Yeah, the next thing is operations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of end-user experience depends on how well you manage your operations in the exchange environments. A few things that we always come across is lack of proper documentation.
Mm-hmm.
These are things around build guides. I see a lot of companies don't have standard build guides for building their exchange environments, which leads to, you know, different configurations for each and every server.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you don't have a standard build guide so that everybody follows the same best practices, right, or same set of instructions to build an exchange server, I see one server configured totally different from the other server.
Wow.
So, yeah, so the problem becomes, you know, when you're installing patches or when you're managing systems and there is no consistent way, and, you know, it makes it a very difficult task to troubleshoot the issues. Another document that I would say about 50 to 60% I don't see is, you know, your actual disaster recovery plan.
Yeah, real document plan.
Yeah.
Because I was also thinking, when the configuration stuff, couldn't I be handling this with the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit or with ConfigMan to actually have a template of this is how we set up an Exchange server?
Right. Yes. You can use the config manager to actually, you know, to basically specify a template of Exchange, and it will alert you if anything goes wrong with that particular configuration or changes from the default configuration. There is also a piece in EXBPA, which we call Exchange Best Practices Analyzer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a standard tool that's again developed by the product group. Basically, has certain best practices defined in it. You can run it against your whole exchange environment,
mm-hmm.
and it runs, scans your environment for any issues and reports them back. So you can also use the tool to create a baseline of your environment and run against that baseline. So that
and where do I get this tool?
It's also, again, available, you know, just Bing for EXBPA updates. And it's also actually part of the Exchange toolkit. So it gets installed as a part of Exchange installation.
Okay, yeah. So this is, part of Exchange as well. It's just going into all the tools that are there, because that's also where the connectivity checker is.
Right.
There's a lot of good tools that are built into Exchange.
Yeah. So, so as we're talking, the disaster recovery documentation is something, you know, people have, maybe started a project once, they start something writing up, but never complete those documentations.
Mm-hmm.
And, especially, when we have a good example, recently I was helping the customer with the Hurricane Sandy,
mm-hmm.
and, their data center was in the New York region. And, in order for them to continue services during the hurricane, we had to fail over the whole setup to their other data center,
right.
That's somewhere else in U.S. So because they had the full documentation, we were able to walk through the step-by-step process.
The other part of this is actually having executed the disaster recovery process at least once, so you know that it works.
Yep, for sure. That's definitely something we see in the environments where they actually have a plan but never actually test it.
Right.
Unless you test it, there is no way you're able to identify what's wrong in the document. And, and the document doesn't get updated all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, one specific issue I ran, as I was saying during Sandy, was, there was a Swarish pack upgrade that was not, and a change was made to a registry key, per se, that was not updated in the DR document. So when we failed over to the DR side, that's something, that's an issue we ran into where, that we had to recover from.
Sure. Yeah, it'll actually break things. So
yep.
You got to make sure you keep maintain that documentation as well.
Right.
What about patching? Because Microsoft puts out a lot of roll-ups for Exchange.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so from the patching aspect, right, there are two things that you need to consider, your Windows patches and your Exchange patches.
Right.
Now, as a part of this risk assessment, we actually do a scan of all the patches that are installed on the systems and, give the end users a report on, what's missing, what's inconsistent from other tools or from the other servers.
Right.
So as far as the Exchange patches goes, you have your service packs, which
yep.
typically also includes certain types of schema updates.
And generally speaking, when it comes to service packs, do you ever say no to those? Aren't those the right thing to install?
Yeah, always. Because service packs typically also have feature updates. There's like a good example being when we introduced Service Pack 2, we introduced hybrid configuration wizard
right.
for, configuring Office 365 and integrating that into them.
Mm-hmm.
So service packs are always recommended. And the other thing you have to consider with the service packs is the support policy. So I believe it's 1 year is when once the service pack is released, the previous service pack gets out of support after a year of release.
Right.
So in order to stay up to date, service packs also always get a lot of features and changes. And to stay up to date, to be in a supportable state, you want to push towards the latest service pack. As far as the roll-ups.
Yeah. Let's talk about roll-ups.
Yeah. Typically, we get once every quarter. For the last couple of roll-ups, we've been seeing a few issues where the roll-ups have been pulled back for one reason or
yes.
the other.
Well, I think right now, roll-up 4 V2 is current, right, on 2010?
Right. And
says a lot that we have a V2 of a roll-up.
Yeah. So, usually customers who tend to have a good testing environment, they always try to test these roll-ups before they actually put in the production. They,
for sure.
They're able to recover from these failures, but customers who try to deploy this definitely in the production day one, I would say, maybe hold up for a couple of weeks before you actually start implementing this in the production.
Well, I've always had a mindset that only apply a roll-up if you have a problem. If everything's working, wait for the service pack.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it depends on your operational practices. Mm-hmm. Some customers, they want to, you know, when they release roll up, there are a lot of things that not just that are impacting you, but could impact you in the future, you know, like a store crash or, you know, there are a lot of fixes that go into a roll up. So, you know, even though you're not affected by that particular issue today, you may get affected by an issue that's already fixed in a roll up.
And yep.
Being proactive is nothing wrong, you know, you're proactively trying to prevent those issues from happening. So, but again, as I said, if you have a test environment, you know, you definitely want to test it.
When I feel like you have to have a test environment if you're going to deploy rollups, because they have a history, they have bitten people before.
Right, for sure. Even the latest one, it seems that it has been pulled back, the RU5, because of a particular issue. And I think Microsoft is taking good steps to make sure that, you know, they don't run into this issue in the future. But yeah, definitely that has been a pain point for the customers.
Sure. And it just, have to be careful about them. But do you have any fear at all around service packs? Because I've just never run across them being problematic.
Yeah, usually not, because the regression testing that goes into the service packs is much higher, you know, because it involves a lot of fixes. You know, it includes, feature changes. So I never seen a service pack being an issue.
Right.
Most customers tend back, step back doing a service pack because of the AD schema changes that are involved, which typically means that, you know, you're changing the whole AD infrastructure per se. But, you know, I have never seen an issue occur because of an AD schema change that came from Microsoft. You know, I have seen third-party products do some issues with the schema changes, but I've never seen Exchange run into any problems. But again, you know, you have to go through the due diligence of testing your environment, you know.
In the end, that is not a sufficient excuse if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
And one last point on the roll-ups or service packs is, there is a particular order we typically recommend for customers to deploy their service pack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a small environment, you can do everything in a day. But if it's a large environment, typically we recommend doing the client access server first, the two in the internet-facing sites. So when you have, say an internet-facing site and a non-internet-facing site,
mm-hmm.
typically the request is proxy, like say your OWA request or the ActiveSync request comes to the internet-facing site and gets proxied to the non-internet-facing site.
Cool.
So the recommendation is to always do the internet-facing client access servers first, and then, do the rest of the environment. So it's client access, hub transport, unified messaging, and mailbox.
Right, and the mailboxes come last. And what about that interaction between the Windows updates and the Exchange updates? Do you presume Windows updates first, then Exchange?
Yeah, usually I recommend doing it because, you know, the whenever we do the testing per se, you know, they're always doing the latest builds of the Windows machine.
Right.
So, you know, it's always good to do the Windows updates before the Exchange updates.
Okay.
If your servers are in a DAG per se, there is a script that's built into the Exchange scripts directory, which actually gives a good way to manage installing these updates on when you're in a DAG. Because, you know, when you're in a DAG, you want to manage that high availability, you want to fail over the databases in such a way that, and fail back, you know, so that the updates occur on one server at a time. No databases are activated when you're trying to do an update, and you know you don't want databases activating on that server during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a start DAG maintenance. It's a script that's available in the scripts direct on the Exchange server itself. So,
and if you're running DAGs, you need to follow those procedures pretty carefully. You don't want to break them.
And there is a good TechNet article actually called Exchange 2010 Servicing. If you just search for that Exchange 2010 servicing, you should be able to get to it. Basically gives you details around what do you do, how do you plan for service pack updates, what are the steps that are needed. One issue that most customers run into, I've seen, is with the service packs also is that it needs the Exchange server sometimes needs access to the internet, you know, to contact the CRL, which is the certification revocation list, during the process of installing the pack. So when you don't have that, there are steps in the document which gives you, you know, step-by-step guide on what to do when you don't have internet access so that the install completes successfully.
Yeah, and absolutely, you got to get these things right.
Yeah.
Back to this whole, we're trying not to break the mail. Breaking mail is bad.
Yeah.
Should we talk a little bit about certificates? Because they seem to come into play a lot of places. I've just had a conversation with a customer who's trying to hook up his WIN phone to his Exchange box, having no success. And I just, you've got your certificates messed up warning went up.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about certificates?
So it's a saying, right? When we came to Exchange 2007, everybody become a certificate expert, whoever is dealing with Exchange. So certificate plays a big role in the Exchange environments because they are used as a means of, you know, authentication and validation.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few things that you have to consider when you have your certificates, right? Think about certificates from the aspect of the client connecting to the server and the need for the certificate validation.
Right.
So if you have Internet Explorer as an example, and you connect to your CAS, you need that certificate to be valid.
Yeah.
You know, the name has to match. If there is a mismatch in the name, the certificate should be valid in terms of the expiration. Right. If it is expired, IE throws that pop-up saying, you know, a certificate is expired.
Yeah, scares people. But on phones, quite often, that'll just cause it to fail. This is no option. It just goes, yeah, this is invalid cert. I'm not going ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Some phone devices, you know, we talked this, Bhargav talked this during his session where he said, you know, some phone devices just ignore that certificate error and continue to work. But Windows Phone, per se, is, you know, doesn't follow that principle. It actually, you know, is a good client where it actually sees that it's an invalid certificate and doesn't make that connection possible.
Yeah.
So the big aspects that I see from the risk assessments is that people tend to forget, as a part of their planning, that certificates is all plays a major role.
Yes.
You know, they have to consider about all the names that go on to those certificates.
And there's a bunch of names, right? I mean, your basic mail dot domain is always going to be one of them. What else?
Right. Well, you have your AutoDiscover.
Right.
AutoDiscover. And then different aspects, depending on how your environment is, you know, do you have a DR site? Do you have a failback, meaning sometimes when you are in DR and you want to fail back, you know, there is what we call a failback URL that you need to consider. What's your POP or IMAP URLs that you need to consider? And then what's your SMTP certificate name that has to go in there? The good part to this is you have a certificate wizard within the Exchange console itself. You can just run that wizard and it will ask you a series of questions on, you know, what names do you need?
Right.
Do you have the legacy environment in the picture? You know, so that, do I need a legacy.mail.contoso.com being there?
Sure.
Do I need ActiveSync? Is it the same as your OWA or is it something else?
So right.
It will ask you those series of questions on what names should be going into the certificate and gives you a clear picture on, you know, what the SAM should look like.
Yeah. Right? Now, one of the issues I've run into is I had a customer who used the cheapest SSL provider they could find for their certs on their Exchange box. And sure enough, that was one of the ones that got breached and got put in the decline list propagated to everybody. Now they started getting these errors. If you get in a situation where you're using certs that are now problematic, is there a particular procedure to follow to move to better certs?
Well, it more or less would be, you know, to you know, regenerate a new certificate request and just importing that certificate back into the Exchange environment.
Go to a reputable certificate provider. It's actually important in this case. Do you remove the old certs or just generate new ones and add them in and leave the old ones where they are?
Right. You can disable them. So when you import the certificate into the Exchange environment, you assign the certificate to each of the services.
So, right.
if you say, you know, I want to assign this to SMTP, you have to pick the certificate to assign it to SMTP.
Right.
So you can either, you know, leave it on the server itself, or you can just disable the usage.
Now, isn't that going to upset some existing users when the certificate changes on the back end?
Well, usually not, because, you know, if the certificate was issued by a trusted third party, right, you know, all the browsers or all the machines should have the third party, you know, roots that are trusted. So it shouldn't be a problem when they replace the certificate.
But it really comes down to they've got a reference to the old one, and then they see that it's a new one, and that also can look like a man in the middle attack.
Right. It's sometimes, but again, you know, from an exchange perspective, right, when the request comes in, the exchange is only assigned with one certificate at a time.
Right.
You know, a particular service, SMTP service, is only assigned, you know, one certificate, and when you make that connection to that server, it's that certificate that's being requested by the client.
Okay. So once you switch it, you shouldn't have any troubles, but you've got to switch it.
Yeah, you got to switch it, and you got to assign it to the services.
To each of the individual services, AutoScuzzer,
right.
SMTP, if you're using POP, if you're using IMAP, like each of those things can have, and can they share that cert, or they have to have a separate one assigned?
No, they can share the same cert, you know, by default, right? By default, when you just install Exchange, it adds a self-signed certificate.
Right.
And, you know, that's the same certificate that's assigned to all the services, per se.
Yeah, so makes sense. All right. Well, I don't want to spend all the time on certificates, but this is clearly an issue that's hit me recently. So it's certainly something I'm worried about. What other issues can we run into?
Okay. So the other big issue that we see that we also get a lot of support tickets around is configuration, configuration of the Exchange environment. Now, you know, the way Greg Taylor puts it is by default, CAS is broken out of the box, which means that, you know, there are, it's not broken per se, it's just that there is a lot of configuration that needs to be done to make it work. So, for example, when you just install Exchange, you know, you have a self-signed certificate, right?
Yep.
By default, that's broken because, you know, when you open a browser, go to OWA,
you're going to get the warning every time. And all WIN phones are going to barf on that. Like, lots of things get unhappy with self-signed certs.
Right, right. And that's where you need that configuration to be completed successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect to it is Exchange 2010 introduced what we call RPC client access arrays. Arrays are, you know, basically a logical grouping of CAS, where, you know, you just give a name and your load balancer is configured to that. So because of the use of load balancer, you know, and because of the different ways load balancers can be configured in terms of affinity, right, people, you know, ran into a lot of issues in terms of misconfiguring these affinity configurations on the load balancer. So the best practice usually is, you know, check with the vendor. The vendor worked with Microsoft to develop guidelines and published guides on how to actually configure their load balancer to work with Microsoft Exchange 2010. And just follow those guidelines. Because, you know, each protocol type, so RPC access, for example, supports only client IP affinity. Web, for example, OWA supports cookie-based affinity or IP affinity, but, you know, depending on what your load balancer is, the best configuration for that environment may vary.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on the load balancer I have.
And when I don't want to get you stuck up on any given brands here, but, you know, F5's a big one, Citrix, like there is a bunch of these, and they all have slightly different rules to them.
Yeah, exactly, and the different you know, ways you actually configure them. What F5 says as affinity could be different from what Citrix says as affinity, right?
Sure.
So, you know, when I'm speaking to you, understand that, you know, I'm speaking from the F5 perspective because I have F5 in the environment.
Yeah.
So it's all, you know, each vendor actually has their published guides.
Yes, of how they want to work with Exchange.
Right, exactly.
And is Affinity the normal configuration? Like, you normally are sending a given IP to a given CAS server?
Well, There are certain aspects to it, right? Like when you have RPC client access, which is on Outlook talking RPC
right.
To the, you know, only IP-based Affinity is the one that works the best.
Right.
Right. So, you know, in that aspect, most of the load balancers have similar configurations. But it when it comes to web-based services like OWA, ActiveSync, EWS, Exchange Web Services,
yep.
you know, there are different Affinity models that are supported by each one of them. A good example being ActiveSync supports SSL session ID,
okay.
for example. But, you know, if you, I have seen issues in the environments which actually use iPhones where an SSL session ID changes with every connection.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so what happens is, you don't have Affinity anymore at that point. You're just making, you know...
You're just renegotiating the SSL each time. I mean, that's where I'd like an F5 box doing SSL termination for me, just so that I don't have that issue. There is only one cert to talk to.
Yeah. So, you know, again, that's, as we're discussing, you know, it's whatever the vendor recommends from a load balancer best practice configuration perspective, right?
Right.
One thing I always tell customers is, there is a published guide for building your Exchange servers.
Okay.
Which, you know, just again, search for Exchange build guides on TechNet, Exchange 2010 build guides.
Mm-hmm.
These are actual templates which will give you all the steps that are needed to actually configure your Exchange environment. You know, these includes Windows configurations that are needed.
Yep.
You know, when you're building CAS, you know, how do you... You know, generating the certificate request, building the CAS arrays, configuring, you know, the databases, the DAGs. That's another big thing issue that I see is DAG misconfiguration.
Yeah.
You know, even though you know, the building of the DAG is very straightforward, you know, it's just a couple of clicks in the wizard. You know, the post configuration is where most people miss the step. There
and
are certain
you get back to this whole issue of malware. You don't want to experiment with your DR and failover modes because people are so dependent on it. You've got to keep this in the lab and try all these things.
Right, exactly. You definitely have to test, validate these configurations.
Sure. Well, Kamal, I have this stack of great links now of all these tools people should be looking at to understand where their Exchange servers are at risk. I really appreciate that. We'll put them all in the show notes so that folks can come and grab them.
Sure.
Any final words, things we need to take another look at? What have we missed?
Well, I think, you know, we covered most aspects of it. As I said, you know, when you know, it all comes down to your planning.
Yep.
Think about you know, what services you want to offer. Think about your service levels, operation level agreements. Then that's when you want to go into your physical infrastructure planning. You know, what's your sizing going to look like?
Yeah.
What's your environment going to look like? And then go into your configuration plans. You know, how do I build my Exchange servers? What's the OS configuration? How do I standardize it? Then go into your environmental settings, you know.
Yeah.
What's my mailbox size, mailbox limits, you know, what's my Exchange configuration going to look like.
Awesome.
And then, yep.
Kamal Aburi, thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.